My guest is Robert Brochner. He is a scientist and coordinator of project, Kolos project, monitoring honey bullosis. Robert, what are the purpose of the program? I understand that you believe, as researchers, that we are living in era in which the loss of colonies is greater than it should be.
Oh, yeah. So the first assumption, yeah, colony losses could be lower. I think that's all the studies that have shown so far. And let me tell you a little bit about the core project of Kolos, which is called Monitoring Honeybee Colony Losses. So Kolos is organized in core projects and task forces. And there is three core projects. And core projects means that they are really so important that they are enduring the whole duration or as long as Kolos exists. And already from the beginning on, it was important for Kolos to collect data on honeybee colony mortality. Actually, in 2008, when Kolos started, so it's 15 years of Kolos in 2023, there was no coordinated effort on honeybee colony mortality. Can you imagine? And then Kolos was funded as a European Union cost action. And one working group, I think it was the working group one, was dedicated on counting colony losses. And since then, there was some substantial changes in Kolos. It's not funded by the European Union cost action anymore. It's funded by private money. For example, the Swiss Ricola Foundation is one of the fund givers, but also other sponsors are supporting us. And here we have this core project and the group of which some people you can see now is a group of about 30 to 40 people who are in their countries monitoring honeybee colony mortalities, throw all the data into one database and see if the assumption is true. For example, if we have high colony loss rates and what are risk factors associated with it.
Okay. Like all statistical surveys, this one depends on the representativeness of the sample. Is yours data from beekeepers are representative?
It depends on the country. There is two things. We can measure the representativity with different indices. For example, in Austria, I reach about 5% of the beekeeping population, which I'm very happy, I must say. In other countries, we even reach more than 20%. I'm speaking for Denmark, Scotland, maybe Sweden, Norway, and these countries. We have very high response rates. So that's one is response rate. And the other thing is how representative the responders are. And in Austria, for example, I can compare the number of colonies that the responders have with what I expect. Because if I get only the small ones or only the large ones, I have a bias, but actually I'm quite happy with what I receive. So I think it's very representative for my country. So that's one thing that we can discuss. And the other thing, maybe we don't need representativity, because if I want to answer some simple questions, like if a screened bottom board has an effect on winter colony mortality, I'm mentioning this example because we just heard a presentation about this, even from our colleagues from Poland, or if we want to know if the risk for colony loss is higher with young queens than with older queens, I don't need the representativity anymore. Because I need the representativity to say, okay, the colony loss rate is 17% in a country. It could be an over or underestimation. But if we are speaking about risk factors, I don't care if I'm over or underestimating it, because then I'm splitting my population of responders into two groups. And then I maybe have lower losses in the one group than in the other group. And there is no more statistical bias in it.
Okay, because you are interested finally only general statistic or whole Europe. I understand correctly?
Yeah, of course we are doing this in more than 30 countries. The majority are from Europe, but we also have like Mexico on board. We have some North African countries on board, one or two Asian countries. And yeah, so we have a general interest to actually have a global coverage. That would be great.
Yeah, but you talked about present. In Poland, we have less than 1% active beekeeper who make this statistic. So maybe I think I understand what you said moment before, that I think it's not very good statistic, less than 1%. So maybe we could make some message for Polish beekeepers now.
Well, the statistic is good, but the response rate could be higher. 1% is not as good as you would have 5%. So my recommendation is that it would be great if Poland could increase the participation rate here. And I think that there's also something in it for the beekeepers. One example, I receive many, many emails from Austrian beekeepers that say, thank you, because once a year I'm sitting down answering your survey, contributing to this research, and then I'm forced to write down what I did. And then I can see or can understand that there is a structure behind it, which maybe is not so present for myself. But when I'm forced to write that down, I reflect what I've been doing. And with the results, when I lost 20 or 30% of my colonies, I can compare, for example, how is it in my district or in my region? And I see I'm losing more than the colleagues. I need to maybe reflect what I could do better. So I think that there is also an educational approach in what we are doing here.
Okay, so the thesis that more beekeepers is better in this project is correct.
Yes, the more the better. So we are speaking also about crowdsourcing. We are speaking about big data. And the more you have, the better, the more precise the results of the research questions can be answered.
Of course, better for scientists' project. But finally, for beekeepers, if they worry about their losses too.
Actually, what we are doing is we are trying to optimize beekeeping and to reduce honeybee colony losses with the knowledge of what are best practice management, for example.
Okay, my last question. What are your plans for the future? I mean project, of course.
Well, we can always extend to more countries. That's always a plan. We are working now on a publication that also estimates the economic cost of honeybee colony losses. So that's hopefully something that in the next 12 months you will hear about. And yeah, continue, keep all the countries going that are in, increase the coverage in those countries that are in to get better data from different countries and to extend to new countries.
Okay, thank you, Robert, for the conversation, and have a nice research, and I wish you success.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Hi, my guest is Lotta Fabricius Christiansen. You are a researcher and scientist from Sweden. You are coordinator of the project BeeRap. Yes, from Kolos.
Yes, that's right.
The main goal of BeeRap, as is written on the Kolos website, is to ensure the result of the science and research beekeepers, science beekeeping, to lead to improve practice to beekeepers. Beekeepers, at least in Poland, as I noticed, often raise the issue related to the fact that their practice is supposedly incompatible what scientists are trying to study. There is a talk of a discrepancy between theory and practice, that practice is more important than theory. I believe this claim stems in part from a misunderstanding of what a scientific theory is. However, you are examining data from beekeepers at the level theoretical and statistical, where the results from the field, from apiaries, are taken into account. What is the reason for this misunderstanding, in your opinion, of the science is all about? Maybe it's a problem with communication.
Yes, I would say for me, it's not a contradiction. It's not opposite sides. Science and practice is not opposite side, or theory practice. It's two way of looking at the same things. For me, you have a knowledge base based on theories. That's also knowledge input to the topic that you are studying. And also practice is a knowledge base for practice into this topic. So they are both equally important, I would say, from my point of view. But as you say, there sometimes feels that they are on different sides and it does not communicating with each other. So absolutely, communication is usually the problem. We don't speak the same language, maybe. We don't express things from practice or from a more scientific perspective, maybe, in such a way that they are comparable. It's sometimes difficult to know how to use knowledge based on practice into science or vice versa. So it's a communication problem, and that we need to solve. And that's why we have this kind of task force or core project, actually, as it's called within COLOS. How can we bridge this? How can we have the change from practice to theory and theory to practice? So it's both ways.
Okay. And what tools do you use to communicate with the beekeepers?
So we can use many ways of reaching out. And I would say the most common ways of doing it is writing articles, popular science articles, usually for beekeepers magazines, for example, giving presentations. We did a survey actually with among the COLOS members to see how do they disseminate their research. And those were the two, I would say, main, businesses that they did to reach out to beekeepers, giving presentations and writing articles in beekeepers magazines.
How do you think, what role can science popularizators can play in this action?
For example, like you do in your pod, that's, I would say, it's a very efficient being to be this, the person bridging between. So like what you are doing, popularizing science, but also like advisors or, you know, those working as advisors within beekeeping that you give advice from. They also have this bridging effect. So it's, we have to find different ways. Some people are listening more and look, or others looking to videos or other, like to read. So it's different ways of getting the same information. So every channel is very important.
Okay, thanks. If I understand the ideas of this project correctly, you are trying to understand the problems of beekeeper in the course of research, which inform you what they should to make to their action can be effective. Yes?
I don't know if I got your question correctly, but if we have this, beekeeper has a problem, it wants to be solved somehow, and how to put that problem into research in such a way that they could investigate or learn from the experience of the beekeeper and see what can we do to help solving this particular problem. And usually science could be more generalizing. So maybe it's not hands-on in that such a way, but if we have the communication between practice and the researcher, maybe we could have more applied research, actually giving some solutions, practical solutions for beekeepers. And that's also a problem. It's hard to find funding for more applied research projects because usually they are much more into basic research. It's easy to find money for funding. And so for that, we need to change a bit the system, I would say, because we need some more money for applied research. And it should also be, you know, for scientists to have good scores in science. You usually count the number of articles you're producing in different magazines. They are not popular magazines. They are more scientific magazines. So if we had the possibility for researchers to actually spend more time producing popular science articles, then we can also have a better outreach and more applied research approaches.
So the main purpose, if I understand correctly, you, is that finally you, as a scientist, want to work on the beekeeper's problem, which they recognize that it's the their problems. Yes?
Yeah.
So why I ask you, because I wanted to debunk this misunderstanding that theory and practice is on the other side.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. It should be on the same side. And we're going through, I think we have the same goals, but different means of reaching there. And we need to find places where actually researchers and the beekeeper, practical beekeepers, actually meet and discuss these things. And those meeting places are quite rare. So, for example, if in your pod, if you could have both arrange those meetings for discussions, that could be a good thing to start with, maybe.
Okay, my last question, but long questions. For beekeepers, according to your research, are economics profits or bee health are more important for their problems? I expect you will answer that this and this is important, but it seems to me that research shows generally that this does not always go hand in hand. Of course, I mean short-term profits in the apiary, not long-term profits for the bees, providing the so-called ecosystem service for humanity.
Yeah, and that for that you need to raise your view a bit. You have a bigger picture. So, of course, if you have healthy bees, you had and healthy bees usually comes with more good economics in the beekeeping. And we can see, for example, in many cases that more professional beekeepers actually have lower losses of colonies, for example, meaning better bee health in general.
Sorry, only in Europe, but maybe bigger in all world.
I can't answer for the whole world, at least for Europe part, but I also know that for North America, they have kind of same trends showing that even more professional beekeepers usually have more healthy colonies because economical reasons, I would say. It's more important maybe in that case. But healthy honeybees, good economics, then you also have the possibility to provide a good ecosystem service. But of course, then you have to know about the landscape surrounding. Then you can't decide yourself as a beekeeper what the other farming practices, for example, how they do their farming, not affecting the bee colonies in a bad way so that they weaken their health is weakened because of maybe use of pesticides or scarcity. There are no nutritions available because we have no flowers providing pollen or nectar. And for that, we need to collaborate with a bigger community to have a good health and also, of course, then supporting ecosystem services like pollination.
Yes, but I mean only in beekeepers, for example, in beekeepers every moment. For example, is there any problem that if beekeepers only concentrate on the economical value of the, for example, queen bee, but only in a short time, probably could lose, for example, resistance for diseases.
I totally agree. We have one of the identified weaknesses within beekeeping is the short time thinking. When you are, for example, buying queens from outside and they kind of very narrow genetic diversity on those, then you have, if you're going for that and not thinking more long term and that maybe change, for example, climate change, if we want to have that adaptability, which the honeybees do have, if we let them have their more diverse genetics, they could adapt to different climatic situations, for example. So that's very important to preserve. So that we need to work with local races, adapted to the local situations or conditions and preserve that instead of going for buying commercialized queen from queen producers in that way, since we don't know what actually the genes in those are. So for being able to have this long-term preservation of honeybees and the adaptability and sustainability within beekeeping, then we need to preserve the local races. So that's to keep the diversity of genes. Yeah.
Okay. Great end of our conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Yes, you too.
Moją gościną ponownie jest doktorka weterynarii Anna Gajda. Dzień dobry.
Dzień dobry.
My guest again is Anna Gajda. Good morning. We're at a workshop within the COLOS organization, which we've already mentioned. But let's remind that this is an organization of scientists and non-scientists, which, among other things, is concerned with the study of honeybees and problems related to them throughout Europe and even already outside Europe.
Good morning. That's right. Actually, this organization is concerned with preserving the welfare or striving for the overall welfare of honeybees, so to speak, which of course sort of transfers into all this research, although the organization has no money for research. We are sponsored by various other organizations, and this money always goes to the organization's conferences or some kind of meeting where we can actually talk, because it's impossible to arrange such things by email, and the money for research we combine, colloquially speaking, already on our own within their own units.
You're reading my mind, because that's what I wanted to ask. This is a workshop for scientists, among others, who here discuss on their projects, how to implement them in the future, what to improve. They discuss research problems, including statistical and theoretical. Someone might say that wasted money, that it could have been spent on something else. On the other hand, I was a guest here at this part related to the lectures. I must say that what I have already I heard on the internet, I also noticed here. If there is a conversation live in real with people who are in the same room, whether they are having lectures, whether they are discussing, asking questions, it is much more vibrant than how it is on online meeting. We had few examples here with online lectures. I noticed right away that people are getting distracted, they're not as engaged like on the real meeting. I don't know if you confirm this.
Definitely. During COVID-19, I suffered a lot from that because all the meetings, of course, were done online. Well, and I have to say, however, that these online talks, all these online meetings are burdened with some kind of barrier. One could say a bit mental, too. And it also causes a lot of fatigue because we feel all the time the same. Well, we just sit at this desk. We sit at the computer. That is, we are actually doing the same thing all the time. And here you can get up, walk around, see that person's face, and, I don't know, pat him on the back. I know it sounds trivial, but it's completely different. And in fact, in my experience, however, these live meetings always end with something concrete. Not just some such fleeting conclusion, but really something that I don't know, plans for the future that are usually implemented, or some conclusion that is already really a value in itself. On the other hand, very many of these online meetings were a bit of a tripe with oil, you could say, and no one simply didn't want to anymore.
Sometimes with these studies, with these projects, participate, I can see it by the names of the authors who are listed in a scientific publication, but this is sometimes dozens of people, right? With some interdisciplinary publications, probably even more. So it is probably priceless that such a diverse team can just socialize simply. Maybe it's trivial, but it's simply to the benefit of the for this publication, for this project, right? Even things like you said, that people just know each other better.
Definitely. Anyway, COLAS is unique in the world in this respect, and we are really the only this kind of group of scientists, so thou speak, because we're practically from all over the world. That is doing research that is actually true for the whole world. Because until now, scientists have only collected data, for example, from their own countries or from neighboring countries. And it was like completely incomplete information. Because as we know exactly in the case of bees, the climate plays a huge role, if not one of the first, in fact, in many aspects of in beekeeping or bee health in general. So, for example, these monitoring studies, this monitoring of bee colony losses that we've been conducting there for these past 15 or 16 years, it's actually, we are the first in this. No one before us has done it on such a scale and so conscientiously. In fact, for a year we all the time this survey form, which I always shove down everyone's throat somewhere, because however, it has to be filled out. Annually, we improve it, but the main parts remain the same, and this data is actually very important, because we know what happens after each winter, and this then goes to the European Union, to all those decision makers, who then look at it for themselves. Okay, so the losses in Poland were low, so we don't give money. The losses were high, okay, let's give the money. There are no answers at all, or there are few answers. It means they don't care, so we don't give money. So yes, we try. A lot of us do it in our free time. We often work at night, on Saturdays and Sundays, so it's really a job of passion. But like I say, we're the only ones in the world who do something like this, and that is why these publications have such a million authors. But in my opinion, it is still a great added value.
One project that you mainly work on concerns increased losses of bee colonies and statistical research, to put it simply, how many losses there are and what results from them. The second project at these workshops, the BRAP project, is, well, I could say, about communication between beekeepers and scientists, for scientists to find out what problems beekeepers have and that through research, among others, statistical, they tried to answer them what they could do, whether they should do it for it to be effective to solve the problem. And it's hard to imagine any long-term or rational, practical action. However, there is a problem with this communication, right? Because, as you said yourself at a recent conference in Lublin, well, for example, in connection with this project, where you mainly work, increased losses of bee colonies, well, in Poland, you have less than 1% of completed surveys from beekeepers. And now, Or perhaps thanks to this BRAP project, maybe it could be possible to increase this chance, or will we just stick to throwing thunderbolts, just like you did in my podcast? Ha 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 ha.
I suspect that I will never stop throwing thunderbolts, because even if it's 98%, I still won't like it, because you always have to aim higher. However, I believe that this project simply had to be created, because there is a lot of research going on, all over the world, in Poland, in Europe, in general. And very often, it doesn't really translate into that language, just an ordinary beekeeper. Besides, not all beekeepers read English, and besides, they simply do not need such scientific publications. What medium should be added to what container? For some cell to grow, they don't need this. We give them an excerpt from what this publication actually says. What is the consensus of the case? But when it comes to BRAP, it is a very new project compared to these other COLAS projects. So for now, we're learning. We are not talking about transferring specific practical knowledge yet, which will be systematized. This is in the plans. However, we learn to teach other people, for example, beekeepers, or other people, who will teach beekeepers. But also, very recently, there was a widespread survey, which again, of course, did not meet with answers such as I would like, in which beekeepers told us from what sources and how they can do this knowledge in the future. What do they really need? What do they expect? Where is the best place to hit so that it just hits the nail on the head and straight to the recipient, so that he or she understands it, and he wanted to read it or listen to it? These are very preliminary data for now. I think we will probably repeat this survey every year. So we learn. We also learn from beekeepers, and it is a continuous process. I always say that if there is no communication beekeeper, scientist, we don't listen to each other, and they learn something from us. I mean, they are beekeepers, of course. However, we often learn various things from beekeepers. They have very cool ideas. But also how they want to learn is very important to us, because otherwise there is no point in going around with a lecture as you say it, and everyone just sleeps.
Good ending. The last question. This time, the host of these two workshops we are talking about is the Warsaw University of Life Sciences in Poland. How often are you the hosts? And what is the tradition, custom? Is it just in a different country every now and then, every year? Which one belongs to COLAS? What does it look like?
This is, well, you might have thought, that every year it's in a different country. However, simply people who happen to have, so to speak, capacity in their units to organize something like this, they just have options. So they say, okay, we'll do it here next year. This is currently the fourth workshop in Poland. Previously, we also had a workshop of the viruses group and one more workshop too, i.e., these workshops about monitoring. I'm sorry, I just make some mental shortcuts. But next month, we will have further workshops for this viruses group, and I hope we will be here too, because these are our plans, to discuss such very practical translations, what we already know about these viruses, for, so to speak, beekeeping practice.
Will I also be able to visit these workshops as a journalist? And by the way, can you decipher the abbreviation for me and what it means? TF virus, it is in the name of...
Virus Task Force.
That is, this task force. Virus Task Force, yes. Because it is somewhat associated with another abbreviation TF.
Yes, that's why I'm asking. I didn't know this abbreviation at all. Hehe.
Just like VHS and VSH, right? Ha ha ha. Yes, but back to the point, it happens in very different countries, and in Poland very often, actually. That's our fourth time here in total. Well, it's common for these X years, and people come here very willingly. Unfortunately, it usually happens in winter or sometime in autumn, but they like it anyway.
Well, I hope we contributed to its popularity just these science projects implemented within the COLAS organization.
I also hope. But I will still, of course, shout from the pulpit. Hehehe. Thank you very much.
Step by step, brick by brick. Even if 500 people listen to it, maybe they will pass it on to their next friends, so 1,000 people will gather. We have many beekeepers in Poland, but step by step, maybe in 20 years.
We are slowly getting there. It's such a Sisyphean job, but we can do it.
Thanks. Radio Varroza.